WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Virginia may become the first southern state to regulate carbon emissions with a cap-and-trade program. Virginia's Board of Education has issued new rules for evaluating schools and students. And Saturday is National Adoption Day. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, November 17th.
Support for the WMRA Daily comes from Blue Ridge Community College, offering small classes, student clubs, sports, and financial aid while living close to family and friends. Registration for the fall semester is happening now at the Weir's Cave campus or online at brcc.edu.
Virginia is one step closer to implementing a cap-and-trade program. Regulators in Richmond Thursday gave the preliminary stamp of approval on a plan to reduce carbon emissions. Virginia Public Radio's Mallory Nopain was there and has details.
Virginia's Air Pollution Control Board unanimously approved a plan to cap carbon pollution beginning in 2020. The goal would be for Virginia's power plants to reduce emissions by 30% over the following 10 years. Michael Dowd is director of the Air and Renewable Energy Division for Virginia's Department of Environmental Quality. He says Thursday's vote is a game changer.
It is bringing us into the world of carbon regulation, where heretofore Virginia was not a player. We will now be a player. We're a state that's subject to lots of potential damage with climate change in the coming years, and we're finally joining the world of carbon regulation.
Instead of developing its own market for carbon allowances, Virginia would join an existing one that states like Massachusetts, New York, and Vermont participate in. The plan is now open to public comment before a final version goes back to the board for approval. In Richmond, I'm Mallory Nopain.
Every Saturday before Thanksgiving, National Adoption Day is celebrated through various events in the country and in the region. WMRA's Marguerite Gallerini has this preview.
The Foster Care Adoption Awareness Coalition will honor several families on Saturday at 11:30 at Blue Ridge Community Church in Barbersville.
All of these families have adopted children out of the foster care system.
Marnie Allen is a family support, training, and recruitment specialist at Community Attention Foster Families, an organization part of the coalition. They have been providing foster care services in the area since 1976. Over the years, Allen says they've seen a sort of philosophical evolution in their approach to foster care.
We are working really hard on facilitating continued relationships with birth families, even when children are adopted. We don't want to create more loss for the children.
She says it helps the children understand that even though their birth families don't have the ability to meet their needs, it doesn't mean they stopped loving them.
It's great for the kids.
Saturday's event is also a way to remind the general population of the continued importance of the issue. Besides the event in Barbersville, in Charlottesville, Trinity Presbyterian Church has an adoption and foster care ministry open to anyone who has adopted, fostered, or is interested in learning about the process. They're hosting a lunch on Sunday at 12:45. For WMRA News, I'm Marguerite Gallerini.
The Virginia State Board of Education has just approved revisions to improve and expand the way both students and school systems are evaluated and accredited. From our partner station WCVE, Charles Fishburne reports.
For students, it could mean
they will have to pass fewer SOL tests in order to earn a diploma.
And Charles Pyle, Department of Education, says though SOLs will still factor in, school divisions will have more flexibility with multiple indicators, for example.
Under these new standards, we'll also look at those students who are on a trajectory toward proficiency.
And schools will be measured on things like absenteeism, demographic gaps, and dropout rates.
Under this new system, growth will count.
The Department of Education has been studying revisions for 3 years now, responding to criticism that the SOLs were turning schools into factories for test-taking. Charles Fishburne, WMRA News.
Does Virginia impose an unnecessary burden on low-income workers? Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope has this report about a new study calling attention to the state's requirements for licensing.
Virginia is the seventh most burdensome state in America in terms of requirements it puts on lower-income workers to get licenses for employment. That's according to a new report from the Institute for Justice. Painting contractors, for example, must have 2 years of experience and complete a business class before they can get a Virginia license. Lisa Nepper helped write the report.
Our argument is that people who are hiring those contractors should be free to decide how much experience is the right amount of experience for them, rather than creating an artificial and really arbitrary barrier to entry.
But lawmakers are adding new licensing requirements all the time. Earlier this year, for example, the General Assembly passed a law that creates new licensing requirements for laser hair removal. That bill was introduced by Democrat Mark Keem of Fairfax County.
Anything that involves physically touching and or impacting a person's health is an area where you should have some government regulations and some kind of licensing requirement. But if it involves paperwork and less about physical contact with another human being, then maybe we don't need as much.
Akeem says he agrees that some of the licensing requirements might be overly burdensome. And he says he's willing to work with the Institute for Justice or any other organization to get rid of rules that might create unnecessary hurdles for low-income workers to get a job. I'm Michael Pope.
The center of Charlottesville hosts a major university, student housing, residential areas, and, of course, businesses large and small, serving all of them and suffering from growing pains. In his first report for WMRA, Peter Jump looks at this juggling act of development along West Main Street, the corridor between the university and the city's downtown.
In the Oscar-winning documentary March of the Penguins, adult penguins travel hundreds of miles in unison, enduring extreme cold to reach breeding grounds and then feed and protect their young. The university end of Charlottesville's West Main Street is less than a half mile long, but it's a bustling half mile as construction cranes march along, erecting shiny medical buildings, upscale hotels, and luxury apartments that promise undergraduates, quote, lavish living featuring poolside cabanas. Charlottesville's March of the Cranes, expanding the university's footprint, has not gone unnoticed by local officials and residents, including many who want to see a more balanced approach to development at the other end of West Main, the half mile of the street closest to downtown. In 2012, the city created a panel of stakeholders to advise on urban design. Out of that grew a streetscape improvement plan for the 12 blocks at the downtown end of the street. Blue Wheel Bicycles owner Scott Paisley was a frequent participant in the process. While he laments the large-scale construction near the university, he praises City Councillor Kathy Galvin and others for recognizing the need for the city's oversight to catch up with the changes on West Main.
The streetscape of West Main is sort of a secondary consideration. The process began with, I think, a lot of input from the Place Design Task Force and Kathy Galvin, with the recognition, with all of the permits being put in for these large structures like the Flats, the Standard, et cetera, that West Main Street was going to change radically. And the code for the city of Charlottesville was not up to dealing with the scale of what was being proposed. And we see developing now a series of structures that can create a terrible canyon effect for West Main Street.
The portion of West Main covered by the plan is in the Star Hill neighborhood. Brad Worrell is a 13-year resident. While concerned about large-scale development, he praises efforts to repurpose buildings, such as the classical revival-style railroad station built in the 1880s and the Main Street Market, formerly a car dealership.
Some of the smaller buildings, even some that I don't particularly like aesthetically, are contributory to the visual landscape. And I think that some of the development over the last 15 years that has really incorporated existing buildings, repurposing buildings that have some unusual elements, has been a real positive. And raising buildings to put up six-story hotels is to our architectural and cultural detriment.
Charlottesville City Council approved the streetscape improvement plan in March 2016 and approved a design plan in May of this year. The $31 million project covers a 12-block long section of the street and includes stormwater improvements, the burying of utility lines, more trees, and better bike lanes. And a new road configuration at the east end of the street, the end closest to downtown, will create a public plaza, at the center of which will be the existing Lewis and Clark statue. One of the long-established businesses towards the east end of West Main is the Albemarle Baking Company. Owner Jerry Newman wants the street to be more open and businesses to be more visible. although he's already noticed many changes in the last few years, including the use of the street by people working at the university and its hospital.
Incrementally, there's been change. The change that's come has been a lot more foot traffic down the street, and that's really nice. And a lot of people that move back and forth from the east side of town that come to work over here. So the awareness of Main Street as a thoroughfare and a main artery are really alive. But it's started to go through a lot of changes architecturally and developmentally that promise to be good for business.
The goal of the streetscape design is to create, in the words of the plan's consultants, a more equitable approach to development for pedestrians, cyclists, and motor vehicles. Meanwhile, large-scale projects, including a six-story apartment building that will wrap around an existing diner, and across the street an upscale hotel with a rooftop bar, similar to those at the hospital end of the street, are now coming to the downtown end. Nearby business owners and residents are hoping these and other large projects will not endanger the pedestrian and cyclist-friendly neighborhood the streetscape plan calls for. Time will tell. For WMRA News, I'm Peter Jump.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for joining me. Enjoy your Friday.